I come from a background in the art world. Yeah. Around 2016, 17, there was a lot of conversation about memes, in particular this one thing called Pepe the Frog, which was a frog character that was associated with the alt-right at the time. And spending, I don't know, years talking about media theory and semiotics, there were a few of us who said, there is nothing about this picture that is intrinsically a neo-Nazi slogan. You can just put meaning onto different symbols. That's how semiotics works. That was a very unpopular opinion. This spurred a series of conversations. Among them were people who worked in think tanks, the policy world, some of them artists, but people who were very involved in the kind of social media side of the art world, something we called post-internet. This was the a micro-generation of artists who came up on social media. And we were looking at these things like funnels and pipelines and ways in which people would become politicized through the internet and kind of reverse engineered through this process. But just to define what that is very clearly, is that people would enter through like a Ben Shapiro, Steven Crowder kind of tier, general conservative critiques of wokeness and things like that. These young people are generally aware that they're downwardly mobile. They're not going to get these professional class jobs. They understand this is a form of weird workplace discipline or whatever. And then from that, you could kind of strategically recruit people, bring them down these pipelines into a few years later, really far right, just crazy fucking ideas that were totally disconnected from normal Republican stuff. That politicization process was happening. Belief systems were in motion. People were, in fact, being persuaded. And not everyone who maybe once posted a Pepe meme was a born neo-Nazi or whatever. That sounds like common sense now. However many fucking years ago, that was impossible to say. It was so impossible to say that people were disinvited from universities to talk about it even. Friend of mine, Daniel Keller, he wrote a lecture about this called The Basilisk, was disinvited from Goldsmiths University talking about the Streisand effect and how a lot of the poor critiques of this are actually making it worse. So during that time, myself and a few peers started to theorize what a different type of a pipeline would be if you could use social media for political education, and what would be the targeted nodes in which people were receptive to new narratives, right? And who would you actually need to speak to if you wanted to create an alternative? Because our analysis at that time was that this kind of, you know, flaccid liberalism that's making you feel good and like Kamala is brat type of bullshit,
yeah,
that was not going to stand up against Trump.
Yeah,
turns out we were right.
Yeah.
But the thing that would persuade people was, as we saw, the Bernie Sanders social democratic agenda, that the people who voted for the anti-establishment candidate would also support this kind of thing. And so if you wanted to engage in this space, you would need to create a high production value, rigorous discourse about why those values were compelling, and you would need to persuade those people in particular that were leaning towards the right, as we had said before. And so that was the product of about, let's say, like 4 years of research, where I talked to young people who were getting politicized in a podcast form. I did something called My Political Journey. I wrote a book about it called 20 Interviews, where I talked to 10 young people from the right, 10 from the left. Previous to that, I wrote an essay called Politigram in the Post-Left. All of this is kind of in the years between, let's say, 2016 to like 2021 or so, watching this group of young people get politicized in that social media environment. And so when we started the show in September, that was kind of the culmination of several years of work of like, who would we need to talk to? What is even a left that would appeal to these people? Because I can't send them to the DSA. I can't send them to the academy. And our mutual friend, Jen Pan, happened to host this incredible program called The Jackman Show, which is a tremendous influence for this program. And we take people who appeared on that show. Sometimes I take Jen's questions that she asked you a few years ago. And I think our job is to amplify that stuff to this larger audience.
I mean,
and we've been successful in doing
audience,
that
right?
so far.
I mean, you get a lot, you get tens of thousands of views. Of these.
We're up to hundreds of thousands on some of these. Yeah. But the revenue model is just extremely punishing. Like, you have to get millions of views to get, you know, we've made back the production cost on like two of these so far. I think we have a path to profitability where the show becomes sustainable. There's all like very good indications, but I can understand why this didn't happen earlier, precisely because the risk in doing this thing, like some of the episodes we released, they made $200 in ad revenue. You know, it's very, very punishing. So to start a channel, really, really difficult. But we didn't want to, you know, out the gate be doing Zoom stuff. We wanted to make the best quality interviews with the people that we felt had the most important and influential voices right now. So it's an honor to have you on the show. I'm such an immense fan of your work. I didn't want to gas you up too much before the interview, but I just think that you and Catherine in particular are two of my favorites, and I've been very excited from when we drafted the program in the very beginning. When are we going to get Vivek on the show?
It's my pleasure. And I do think, I'll say this, I think if she had eked out a victory, it would have been worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the centrist, the Obama-Clinton faction would have basically just cleaned house in the Democratic Party.
Right, right.
And this kind of intersectional leftism would have ruled the roost for the foreseeable future. I haven't ever seen in mainstream media the kind of reflection on the vacuousness of Democratic Party progressivism,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I haven't ever seen that. Not even in Bernie's first campaign. I don't know. I don't think it'll last very long because we've started a podcast now called Confronting Capitalism.
I'll plug it in the intro. Yeah.
And so we've had 4 episodes now. Some of it you might like. I'm a huge fan of it.
I've heard all of them.
Oh, okay.
They're great.
But, you know, as I said, there's no reason for the Democrats to draw the appropriate conclusions because it would mean revamping their entire strategy and their electoral base.
Yeah.
But we have a good 2 years until the congressional elections. We have 2 years to just, I think we should aggressively go on the offensive on all the things you were asking me about, on all
right.
those things. Because once Rufo and Trump start going after the universities, it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
Under the guise of taking on Marxism and CR, they're going to do away with tenure, they're going to do away with speech, they're going to do away with all the legitimate advances in our knowledge of slavery and other kinds of social domination. It's an attempt to move it back to the 1950s.
Yeah, yeah.
And because the left is now associated with this garbage, they can mobilize people. So unless there's left voices saying that this is all this woke stuff is horseshit and it's okay to hate it, it's going to be a disaster for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the incentives, the risks that you take if you're working in a university. Like if I was full-time employed in a school, I would not be able to do this podcast, yeah. right? I'd be get fucking fired tomorrow.
This is the future, Josh. What you're doing, this is the place where left ideas will grow now. It's not going to be in journals the way it was in the 70s.
No other alternative.
No.
Yeah.
What you need to do is, like myself and Catherine, you need to draw on people who have academic training because they have the time to do research. They've been trained in how to do arguments. But all the dynamism now, in the 70s and 80s, there was real dynamism in academic journals. A lot of new ones popped up around the Vietnam War, the Bulletin for Concerned Asian Scholars, Critical Asian Studies, Journal of Contemporary Asia, stuff around Africa, Review of African Political Economy. Really, really good journals that really develop knowledge and understanding of colonialism and imperialism. That's not going to happen anymore. All of it's going to come from ventures that are independent of academia because academia is so bankrupt now morally. So what you're doing is really important.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
So anything I can do to help you, just let me know. Academics, typically when you talk to an academic, at least in my experience, what I've found is the second they step out of their specialization, it's like turning on CNN or something. They don't have opinions on anything because they try very hard not to have it. The key to success in academia is you don't offend or piss off anybody.
Right, right.
So
the politics of the university academy setting.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you only advance through your department sending out request to people to review your work. And what people then do is if they have been unhappy or offended or are uneasy with somebody's work, that's when they take it out on them. So you never know where the enemies are. And so it quickly cultivate this persona where you don't have strong opinions on anything.
Right.
And so after a while, grad students learn this very quickly. Mm. And so if they asked an opinion on something, they go right for the middle of the road.
Yeah.
Depending on their discipline.
Mm-hmm.
So in the cultural studies, the middle of the road is some kind of identitarian, chic-sounding radicalism, but never talk about working people, about the poor, except in patronizing ways.
Right.
If you're in economics, the middle of the road is some kind of neoliberal fantasy. That kind of. So if you...
Hi, everybody. This is Joshua Citarella. What you just heard is an excerpt from this week's bonus episode. If you want to hear more and get access to the full catalog for Doomscroll and other podcasts, you can support the show on Patreon or Substack, where I'm putting out new episodes every week. This is an independent show. I don't do any advertising, so your support is really what keeps this project going. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.